used to. So you get to help me. I miss sharing the Word of God. It has been such a passion in my life to do that because it so well speaks of our life, our journey. And so on Father's Day, I want to talk about one of the fathers of the faith, Elijah, and his journey. Perhaps we could have the slide up. I also like to share what I've been working on. And so this is an image. I wonder if we get a little bigger. Maybe not, but that's all right if we can't. This is an image that I've been working on. And when you spend about 60 hours on the project, and you have the scriptures of 1 Kings 17 to 19 playing over and over again, so you really live into it, it does something to you. So this is a word this morning for anyone who's found themselves in a cave, who has wrapped their cloak around them and put their head down and said, that's it. There is no life beyond this moment. There is no light that could shine into my darkness. Now, some of you haven't hit the cave yet. You've got that to come. I'm not wishing that on you. But so many of us find ourselves in a cave. And so I want to know how you got there. And I want some hope that God can get you out of it. And Elijah offers us how you get there and how God reaches you in the midst of your lostness and your darkness and gets you out. Does that sound worth pursuing? I think so, because it's true to life. It is it's our journey from darkness to light. Well, let's get the singular repetitive refrain that Elijah uses to define what life is like. You can say it along with me because you probably know it. I only am left. They have torn down the altars, broken the covenants, slain the prophets, and I only am left, just in case you missed that the first time. So that's his script. And he's not going to get beyond that script easily. He's stuck. The needle on the old gramophone record is just grinding it out time and time again. So the question is, how did he get there? And is that the end of the road for this great father of the faith? I became mindful this morning that this is about a 30-year anniversary of when I entered the cave with a full-blown burnout and felt I didn't have suicidal ideation. I had retirement ideation at 45. If I could retire and not have to do this church thing anymore, I will make it. I do not want to have to preach again. And that was 30 years ago, and I'm 75 in 2 weeks' time, and I'm still doing it. And I'm doing it with a joy which I've never had. I'm doing it without a sense of responsibility and burden. I am a different person post-cave than I was pre-cave. And I think there's a clue in the refrain of Elijah. I only am left. Aha. What does that tell you? Here's a man who's taken the weight and the responsibility of God on his shoulders. And maybe you've taken the weight of God and responsibility for your family, your business, your church. And you felt responsible to save a nation, to save a family, to save a business, to save a church. And it all depends on you. If you hear nothing else I say this morning, that's the problem. That is a problem when you shift from doing great things for God to thinking you are the great thing that God has to do great things. There's a shift. I'm the only one that can do this really well, you know. I try to delegate, but really it doesn't work because they don't get it. They don't do it like I do it. I only am left. When you shift into that place of feeling super responsible and super talented, you are in deep trouble. Because you will isolate, you will not delegate, you will take on this huge weight of responsibility, and it will crush you because you've become God. You didn't intend to, you didn't want to, but you did. I only am left. And you know what? He's absolutely wrong. We'll hear that in the next chapter, but we won't get there. We won't predate that. Okay, what happened to Elijah? All sorts of things. Do you remember he had this great faith to say to the king, I'm telling you, Ahab, it won't rain until I say. Now, actually, I don't think Elijah had that much faith. He lived in a desert. If I said that in British Columbia, that would be faith. But let's cut him some slack. The reality was, it did dry up for 7 years. And the brooks started to, they went dry, and drinking water was a huge premium. I mean, in Phoenix, I live in the desert 6 months of the year, and we only get rain significantly about seven times a year. And if we didn't get those seven times a year, we'd be in a terrible place. You wouldn't be able to play golf. I mean, it would be a crisis. Elijah declares there's going to be no rain. And then the reality of not getting rain hits not only the whole nation, but it hits Elijah. You remember, he couldn't even bear to look at to see if there were clouds coming. He was so desperate for rain when he declared there will be rain. And it was a huge stretch for him to believe that God was going to answer. And so he sent his servant to go check, see if there are any clouds. So you feel the stress of daring to step out in faith, risking speaking on behalf of God, and wondering whether God's going to show up. How many of us stand here on a Sunday morning wondering whether God's going to show up and thinking that if he doesn't, this is going to be a real mess? This is not going to be significant. Unless there's a word from God, the people perish, and certainly the preacher perishes if there isn't a word from God. So that's one of the first things that goes on. He takes big steps of faith in his life to believe that God's going to do great things. Some of you are right in that very place right now. You have this young, youthful, reckless faith because you believe that God can do anything, and you're willing to put your life on that basis, on that footing. And that is fantastic. Keep doing it. But recognize there's a cost for doing that. That wears you out. Continually stepping out and needing God to step in, step out, step in, puts you off balance. Unless you can recoup and refresh and renew. One of the best indicators that a preacher is going to burn out, I get to talk about him, you can't talk back, is faith, step out, step in, every every week and not step back and have God step in. So the best indicator of burnout is days off, holidays, sabbaticals. Now, I can say all those things because he's done all three. Good. It's the best possibility that you will recoup. And they tell me that this church grew when he was on sabbatical. It's a bit difficult to say, I only am left when I go away and it moves forward. I mean, I think that's really quite helpful. I'll buy lunch, don't worry. I'll make up for this. Now, there's a famine in the land because there's no water. And so how does God take care of Elijah? Does he send him to a rich billionaire in Seattle or to a widow on Hastings Street to take care of him? Well, I would choose Seattle, frankly. I would feel a lot more solid. But I have to believe that God can provide for my needs through the widow on Hastings Street. Step out in faith and believe that God is going to come through in an impossible situation. And not only that, she's accusing me of being her problem. You're a prophet who's actually come to kill us. And now you're facing the impact of your faith, stopping the water, and having criticism for that faith from those who are the most vulnerable, who don't get your faith and who feel the impact of stepping out. It's getting more and more difficult. And now Elijah's big moment in his life's journey, which was to call a moment of decision in the life of Israel. How long will you go on limping between these false gods, the gods of the culture, the woke gods, and the God of Israel? And just so that you know which is the real God, we'll have a contest on Mount Carmel, and you call down the power of God, and I will call down the power of my God, and we'll see which one answers by fire. That's a stretch, isn't it? I mean, I'm not sure I want to do that. I mean, rain in Phoenix, yeah, well, I can do that. No rain in Phoenix. But I'm not sure about fire on Mount Carmel. That you have to have enormous faith in God. And that's another huge stepping out. Well, it's not that that kills Elijah. It's when it's all said and done, and you've done your ministry, and God did answer, and you've been moving forward successfully in ministry. St. Matthew's, 30 years ago, where I was, we were up to 395 on a Sunday morning. Things were humming, and this was the place to be. And it was then I burnt out. Now, the reality was my wife was dying, and there were many stresses in my life because of that. But there were vulnerabilities in my own mind, psyche, that caused me to break down. So it's not success that causes Elijah to collapse. It's one little threat, one little voice, one parishioner who says, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get rid of you. I'm going to attack you. One little lawsuit. One little word that says, I've got you in my sights, and I'm going to nail you. Queen Jezebel says, unless I do to you what you did to my prophets, by this time tomorrow, they can kill me. That's her threat. So what does Elijah do? Come up with great faith and say, God is my defender. God is my protector. I prayed about this and God says he's going to take care of me. No, the faith is empty. There's no more stepping forward because faith has been used up and now I'm on empty. And so how do I respond to Jezebel? I run away. I run. So what does he do? Ahab delivers the message. He's on Mount Carmel. He runs off the mountain, down the mountain to Jezreel. They say it's about 17 miles. If you didn't get your 10,000 steps in yesterday, Elijah did it for you for the last 4 days. That's 4 days worth of 10,000 steps. I haven't done that too often. Physical exhaustion, take note. Psychological threat, physical exhaustion. But at least his servant is with him. He has a companion with him down to Jezreel. And then the text says, he leaves his servant and goes another day's journey. This day, they have long days in Israel in that time. It was 18 miles this time. And he goes to Jezreel, goes to where the broom bush is. And so he has too many marathons. We don't know whether there was a day or two between them or not. But in any case, you've got another 4 days of 10,000 steps done. And he collapses under the broom bush. Now, look at what he says, because what he says is a big clue to burnout. Does anyone remember what he says under the broom brush? I am no better than my fathers. Take away my life. Well, it's the first bit that's significant. Oh, Elijah, let me get this straight. You thought you were better than those who'd gone before you. Ah. So you have an issue of pride. All the success of your faith steps has led to you to believe that you're better than. So where is your confidence? Now, if you're looking for the gospel in this sermon, you're about to get it. Where is your confidence, Elijah? Oh, it's in works-based, achievement-based, merit-based. Oh, that's how you find favor with God, by being better than other people, by performing harder, stronger, more efficiently, more effectively. Oh, I see, Elijah. You thought you were better than your fathers, and because you're not, you have to give up. Wow, you have a problem, don't you? You have not grasped grace at all. That is not earned. It's unmerited. It's a favor given without you earning it. Well, Elijah is going to go. Can we go back to the cave? Elijah leaves his servant, which is a fundamental mistake, isolation. Anybody that's on a journey to burnout is isolating, is separating, is saying things like, well, you know, I know you want to journey this with me, but you really don't understand how bad it is. You don't quite get it. So I can't share it with you because you wouldn't really understand. Which gives you the right to wrap your cloak around yourself and to put your head down and to enter the darkness and to say, take away my life. I want to die. And anxiety can do that to you. The best example I have of where you no longer hear, and of course what happens in the cave is you don't hear God's voice. You want to hear from God, but you don't hear anything. It's silent on the other side. My best example from 30 years ago was that they marched me out of church when I quit in the middle of a sermon, which was not a good experience. No, it's not good. I don't do that. So they took me to a car and drove me home. And I was laying down about 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and long corridor, 40 feet to where my wife was, and she was playing Mozart quietly down this end. And I yelled, she tells me I yelled, from this end, "Please turn that din down." So when Mozart played quietly at 40 feet sounds like a din, you know that there's a problem with your hearing, your emotional hearing. You can't hear Mozart, your wife, God, because your hearing is all messed up through the place of stress. Best metaphor is if I tune his guitar really, 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 really high, tight, we actually won't hear him playing at all. There will be no music if we stress his guitar out by tightening the strings. He's still playing. God's still speaking. But we can't listen here because our receiver width bandwidth has been destroyed by our stress level. So when you're in burnout, your faith is that God is not speaking rather than that God is speaking and you're too stressed out to hear. You have faith again in yourself. Misguided faith. If I can't hear, he's not speaking. Well, that's I only am left, isn't it? That's all about me. The humble place is, yes, of course God's speaking, but I'm too messed up to hear it. Well, what does God do about this failed leader? Well, you're a write-off, Elijah. I can't use you anymore. I'll find somebody else. Would that be grace? No, it'd be merit, wouldn't it? It would be earned value. But in the grace of God, God restores the broken. Because at the end of the day, people that love God and are healed by God is his end purpose. Not, oh, I've got someone who's useful here. I've got someone who I can get something out of. I can get another ministry out of that person. Ouch. So the very significant transition in this picture. Elijah is now moved from the dark. The text says Elijah was called by God and Elijah came to the mouth of the cave. Wow, that's a big journey back. When you come out from the deepest, darkest place to the mouth of the cave, you are saying, I don't hear you. I don't know if you're there. But I am here. I'm a broken person, but speak to me. That's a place of intense faith. That's a great step out. And God says, I will meet you there. But God doesn't immediately tell him the good news that 7,000 haven't turned the knee. He's not alone. There's no point in telling this person anything right now, because unless they can get their script out, unless they can get their trauma out, unless they can tell you how bad it is, they can't hear how good it is. There's the order of dealing with people who are in a mess. I need to tell you it's an awful, awful situation before you can tell me context and perspective and speak into that. So God doesn't even use words, because at this point, he's beyond words. Words are not going to help. But what he is familiar with is dramatic. The earthquake, the wind, the fire, that'll get his attention, and it does. Okay, then you are doing something, God. But there's no message in the earthquake, wind, or fire. This is not going to be about another great revival meeting. Let's crank it up another notch. Let's do something even more spectacular. This is not going forward, it's stepping back to the place of retreat and quietness and relationship. And then there's a still small voice. But the response to the still small voice is the same internal traumatic script. I only am left. They've torn down the altars. They've stoned the prophets. They've broken the covenants. And I only am left. Yes, Elijah, I get that. I'm not going to contradict you. Tell me how bad it is. And then Elijah tells God again how bad it is. And finally, when the trauma is out, God says, by the way, 7,000 haven't turned the knee to Baal, and I want you to go to this place. And then I will give you instructions and a new purpose and a new mandate. We don't know how many days it took between the cave and the new mandate, but I would think quite a lot of days. God seems to work in quite a lot of days rather than short periods of time when we have expectations that he's going to do something significant. There's a call on my life. Okay, tomorrow? No. The next day? No. Maybe 10, 20 years down the road, that call might be realized. So Elijah gets to the place where he's meant to get to. And God says to him, okay, I want you to anoint Jehu to be king of Jerusalem and Nimshi to be king of Israel. You now have a prophetic gift back. But in it, of course, there is the provision for someone who's potentially egotistical. It's delegation, isn't it? And Elisha is going to be the prophet who's going to succeed you. So I want you to bless Elisha. Delegate now in this second chapter of life. In this post-cave existence, you're going to give away ministry. You're going to raise up other people who will not build your empire. Your empire building is over. My empire building is about to happen through you, through delegation, through giving away and following God's direction for your life. Well, let's summarize, shall we? Let's identify some of the things that we had that were significant. All right, so what led to this place of not hearing God's voice? Overexertion, isolation, loneliness, fear from threat to life, lack of good nutrition, hardship, exhaustion. And of course, I didn't mention the most critical treatment of Elijah was sleep and eating. That repetitive, you need to sleep, you need to eat. Unless you sort out your sleeping and your eating, there's not much point me counseling you. You are beyond counseling. I knew when in the midst of my burnout, I was beyond counseling. Nobody could say anything to me that would be helpful. In fact, I would be annoyed with anybody who tried to, because they didn't understand. But after I had been off for 3 months, and after I had slept and found ways to deal with my lack of sleep, I was open to hearing direction and counsel. Hardship. There is something in this as well called opponent process. The degree to which you give out is the degree to which you need to recoup. If you're that active, you need to be that inactive. So we see the principle of opponent process after all the planning for a wedding. There is often a low third, fourth day of honeymoon. I'm just exhausted. I should be feeling high and up and excited. But all that wedding planning has got the better of me. Postpartum depression, third day after pregnancy. I should be delighted to have a new baby. Well, actually, I'm trying to recoup all that energy getting to this place. Graduation, a real low for students after graduation. All that excitement. A small child, when is the opponent process? The day after Christmas. No more presents. There's something wrong. I should I should be happy with all these gifts, but I'm not. I want more gifts. Elijah put out so much that he didn't build in the opponent process of recovery. And it all leads to suicidal ideation and depression. The treatment. Let him talk. Ask him what he's doing here. What are you doing here? That's a strange question. Well, actually, it's a way to help you orientate. How did you get here? What's happening? Very helpful question. Sleeping, going back to the mountain of the Lord. In Abraham went back to Bethel when he had his troubles. Elijah goes to the mountain of the Lord. Let him talk over and over again. And finally, sharpen his spiritual listening skills. And then a commission to go to have a new purpose based upon God using him to build God's kingdom. Amen.